Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Can't get enough of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to listen to the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we are, actually, we're kind of kicking off the 4th of July week.
Yes.
Because it's, a lot of people are heading out of town.
This weekend. I am.
Yeah.
So, are you?
Yeah, of course. It'll be, I think for a lot of people, it's a great excuse to take a vacation.
Yeah.
First week in July, when July 4th is right in the middle. And,
yeah.
Of course, I remember when I was a young man working on July 4th, a couple of July 4ths in a row.
What'd you do to work on July 4th?
I had my little tree trimming business.
You would work on July 4th?
I remember working on July 4th, helping a guy clear his view for the party he was having that evening.
Really?
Down in Southern California, yes.
Like that last minute was like an emergency tree trimming?
Oh, it's an emergency. You get the high rates on those days,
emergency?
By the way.
I worked 4th of July quite a bit, but I worked in restaurants, so that was just the way it was. And 4th of July was the worst day to work because there was no one that would come to the restaurant.
It wasn't the kind of restaurant you go to on 4th of July?
No, it was a steakhouse, and it'd be un-American to not celebrate 4th of July. So the only people you waited on in the 4th of July were the people that were unpatriotic.
Well, wait a minute. There's people that go to restaurants on July 4th that are patriotic? What are you talking about?
For dinner? You're supposed to be out looking at the fireworks.
Oh, I don't know. Are you? And eating hot dogs. I'll eat some hot dogs on 4th of July. I eat them about twice a year. 4th of July is one. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're not quite at 4th of July. We're still leading up to the 4th of July celebrations coming up this week. But anyway, this is a financial planning program where we talk about financial matters and help people make wise choices with their investments as they plan for their financial futures. And if we love taking calls and answering questions that you bring to us. And if you've got a question for Hanson McLean, we'd love to take the call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to join the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it is 888-242-6766. And let's start right off with calls today. Let's talk with Ken. Ken, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing? My question is about retirement situation. I spoke with one of the advertisers of probably the station that you guys broadcast on, as well as another local station, about financial planning. And I looked into what I was told was some kind of insurance policy where I would pay X amount of dollars per month. I think it was close to $400 per month.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get, I would pay on it at the age of
60. Yep.
A dividend or a return of about $50,000 per year. And I was told it would be disbursed the way that I wanted it disbursed.
How old are you now?
I'm 45.
Okay, so they said you could put this money in for 5 years. That would
until I was 65. In other words, 20 years roughly, and then I'm supposed to get $50,000 a month for the rest of my life, or whatever. No, I'm sorry, per year. I'm sorry.
I was going to say I'd do it.
$50,000 a year.
It's $50,000 a year.
So what did you do with that information? What did you think?
Well, my biggest concern is the company that's doing the investing to get me the dividend going belly up in 20 years.
Mm-hmm. What kind of company? What was the investment product?
It was a universal life or a variable universal life policy.
It was some kind of life insurance policy where after X amount of months or years, it'll be worth 70 something thousand.
Let me ask you this, Kent. Are you participating in a Roth IRA?
No, I don't have anything. I've never put anything in terms of retirement.
Did the investment representative suggest a Roth IRA might be a good starting point?
Before a life insurance policy?
Yeah.
Do you have?
Not really. They were mainly pushing the life insurance.
Do you have children at home?
No, I don't.
Oh my God.
Do you have? If you were to die, this is a bad question, but if you were to die tomorrow,
who is reliant on your income today?
Nobody. But
all right. So, Ken.
Oh, my
Ken,
gosh.
Ken, so listen. First of all, don't ever talk to that person again, right?
Really? Okay.
No, it is absolute.
Oh, come on. That's
garbage.
Terrible.
It's garbage. It's garbage.
It's the worst financial advice I'd heard.
It's garbage. Really? The thing doesn't work. The numbers they show are made up.
A life insurance policy may be appropriate if you need life insurance. But you don't even have a need for life insurance. So what happens is you are paying for a product that has tremendously high, or you're not yet, but you're being pitched this, tremendously high internal expenses plus a cost for life insurance. Now, they say to you, oh, this is how great it is. You put money in. It grows tax-deferred. You're not paying any taxes on any of your earnings throughout the
year. You get to take it out tax-free.
You get to take it out tax-free.
You know what this thing has?
Is that what they said to you? That's what they said. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, Ken, this thing has an extremely high, what we like to call YTB, which is yield to broker. It pays tremendous commissions to this guy.
To the person that's putting the policy.
And you know how much a Roth would pay this person? A Roth investment?
Nothing.
Almost nothing.
Here's the thing.
I'm so glad you called the show.
Yeah.
Don't talk to that guy ever again or that lady.
So there's two things going on here. One,
it was a guy.
Okay.
A very, very well known, popular.
Okay, well,
I'm sure he dressed nice.
No, I'm not going to say any names.
Well polished shoes.
You look like a weatherman.
Yeah, nice suit.
Pointed at charts.
Yeah. Nice car he drove up.
Big words.
Spinning wheels on the car.
What he's doing is putting lipstick on a pig.
So there's two elements that were happening in this, right? The one is underlying investments. The underlying investments that this product had was some sort of mutual fund type investments where you can participate in a variety of different markets. That's the one thing, the underlying investments. Okay. The second is the wrapper it came in. So this wrapper was an insurance wrapper. This insurance wrapper had additional fees, plus it had life insurance, plus it had some tax benefits. Okay?
Okay.
Let's strip away the wrapper for a second. And if we looked at a wrapper of being a Roth IRA is just, it's named after a senator, Senator Roth, who thought so highly of himself, he thought he'd name a retirement product after himself. Senator Roth is the one who sponsored the legislation.
You put the money in, you can invest it in
whatever you want.
Whatever you want. For you at your age, I would buy a total market index.
Or a variety, or a
basket,
fund.
But you're 40.
Target maturity fund.
Something along that line.
20 years
lines.
Out.
And then.
What did you call it? A target maturity fund?
If you were my brother and I was talking to you, I'd say, look, go to the large no-load mutual fund family that you can think of, or the largest one. Look at a target date 20 years out.
Buy that.
Use a Roth IRA and put $400 a month into
it. And let it grow.
You're not going to pay any commissions.
Let it grow. And when you take the money out, it's tax-free.
It's the best place for you to start. Once you've maxed out a Roth IRA,
call us back and we'll give you the next step. And that steps that we give you when you call us back will never, ever, ever include a life insurance policy because you have no need for life insurance.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Unless you're interested in how well this guy's lifestyle that is pitching it turns out, you don't want anything to do with it.
Continuing on. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of the program. We're talking with Steve. Steve, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Gentlemen, hey, how are you guys?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Question is this. I run a small civil engineering business, and the potential is there for someone to come in and grab me and pay some cash. And you know, I'm 57 years old, and I may just want to take whatever the money that is and go play golf for the rest of my life.
So you have a civil engineering business. How many are you the sole owner, or is it a partnership?
No, I have a partner.
Okay, it's a 50-50 type partner. How's the structure?
Yeah, that's correct. 50-50.
And does your partner know about this? Are you having that discussion with your partner as well?
Oh, no. This would be all in the, you know, on the up and up with him. We're, you know, a small firm. We have some pretty good clients. And so, you know, our plan is, and we think we have a pretty good shot. We have some, you know, fairly good clients that I think would be attractive to a larger firm. And I think we could get snapped up.
Okay. And are you talking with some firms now?
No, we're not.
Okay. So
not yet.
Have you talked to any M&A firms or any attorneys that specialize in these sort of transactions?
Nope, not at all.
A couple of things to look at. So what's going to happen with this is they'll give you some consideration up front, some cash up front.
What normally happens,
and you know, there's always outliers, but typically, and for you to maximize your value, you'd get some consideration up front. And then some paid out as an earnout over a period of time, a 1 year or 2 year period of time. Typically, it's based upon how successful everybody is in transitioning the clients.
And how many clients actually come along for the ride. Because what they're buying is your employees and your client list. So they want some continuity with you in that process.
Yeah.
So that's
of course, that's understood.
Yeah. Yeah. And be very, very careful when you're negotiating this on the earnout side of it. Because the ability to misconstrue what was agreed on a year or two down the road is pretty it happens pretty often, and you want to make sure that you've got a really, 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 really good attorney on your side. Good.
Which we do. We have excellent attorneys and accountants and things like that.
Perfect.
Watching over us because we're just engineers. We don't know about that.
You can tell Steve's been in business a while when it was plural. We've got good attorneys and good accountants.
Yes,
different specialists for whatever the needs are.
So what's your question for us? What to do with the money?
I have this dream. Yeah, exactly. So I have this dream that after taxes, I'm going to walk away with, let's say, $4 million. And so what is the best vehicle for me to leave that in one place, have it pay me every month tax-free, and, you know, be able to go enjoy the rest of my life with my kids and take vacations and all that kind of stuff.
So tell us a little bit about your investment history. So have you invested, I assume you probably have a company, 401k or SEP or something along those lines. How has your portfolio been invested over the years?
Well, it's pretty much the 401k with the mutual fund idea and all that kind of stuff.
Has it been primarily equities or a balanced portfolio of 50-50? Or?
Balanced. Okay. Usually pretty balanced. You know, in the past, very aggressive, and you know, I've kind of dialed it back as we get older. I do have a Roth that, you know, I'm just not able to contribute to, from what I understand, because I make too much money.
And is your home paid for or not?
It is not.
And do you plan on staying in Irvine, or do you plan on moving somewhere?
I do. We love Irvine, and we love to stay here.
Okay. So probably the first thing I would do is probably pay off the home. And the reason being is that money not going out is the same as money coming in. And
you can make – one can make an argument for paying off your home, and one can make an argument for not, right? During this last downturn, I don't know anybody who was foreclosed upon that didn't have a mortgage.
And the reason we like the homes to be paid off is we find actually people, it changes their risk tolerance a little bit.
How big is your mortgage?
It's $3,000 a month.
How much do you owe on it?
Oh, $520.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah, okay. So to generate $3,000 a month, you'd need close to, on a real conservative side, $800,000 sitting in an account, right? In this market without taking on a lot of risk, unless you want to take on risk?
So the answer to your question, so if you sold this thing for $4 million, and when the tax...
You said after taxes, $4
million. Oh, after taxes, $4
million. After taxes,
I think I would probably go with a balanced portfolio. I think that
there's a couple, So there's not one vehicle. So there's a few ways to look at this. You could say, I'm going to take a portion of this, and make sure it's an 100% guarantee investment, such as I'm going to take a portion and put it in U.S. Treasuries, or a portion, maybe even buy an immediate annuity from an insurance company for some portion to give you a kind of a private pension, so to speak. You could go along that line. You could just say, I'm just going to have a real balanced portfolio, knowing that my portfolio is going to go up and down. There's going to be some years it's going to do much better than the income I'm taking, and some years it's going to do less than the income I'm taking, but figure out a realistic withdrawal. How much are you expecting to pull out of $4 million a year? What would be your kind of income?
Well, that's, you know, what I'd love to do is leave it alone. Just let it sit there and stay $4 million and I live off whatever interest I can make from it.
Yeah, and so what we would like is to see that continue to grow and you live off some interest so that 20 years from now, when the loaf of bread's 10 bucks instead of 5 bucks, it's not an issue. Of course, I think with $4 million, it's not bread that's going to be the issue. It'll be bigger expenses, like can we afford to take that trip and that sort of thing.
That sort of thing.
So,
well, I heard somebody, the reason I'm calling is I heard somebody say, hey, tax-free municipal bonds, and they were talking about something else. I don't know anything about
that. Might make sense for a portion.
It would make sense for a portion. Absolutely. Okay. If you were sitting in our office, we would recommend a portion of it in tax-free.
Maybe 20% or something.
In tax-free muni.
But see, they have their own risk as well. So, for example, municipal bonds they're essentially loans to municipalities. So if you buy a municipal bond, right, you're loaning money. So you want to buy a California bond, you're loaning money to California. You want to buy a bond in Irvine, you're loaning money. But municipalities carry some of their own risks.
And a lot of the tax-free bonds out there are Puerto Rican tax-free bonds.
Puerto Rican? Wow.
Yeah, from Puerto Rico.
If you search for the highest yielding municipal bond funds, would have been the ones.
You would have found them from Puerto Rico. So while municipal bond funds,
it's U.S.
Should be a percentage of your portfolio. Then the second question is, what kind of municipal bond funds? Right? Should I get ones with
individual bonds?
Should I get ones with
general
obligation revenue? What is the is the length of the bonds?
The key, Steve, is if building a portfolio is similar to how large pensions and endowments and foundations manage their money.
And then stress testing the portfolio so that you know what to expect out of it. So part of our process at Hanson McLean is to stress test portfolios.
And we're not here to plug a firm. This is just kind of...
And what the stress test portfolio, it's not 100% accurate because you don't know until after the fact, but it's predictive of what a particular portfolio will do in certain market conditions. So as much as investment advisors love to talk about the upside of the portfolio, we love to talk about the downside. And the reason is, of the $2 billion plus we manage and the 4,000 clients, and I've been doing this for over 20 years, I have never received a single phone call when the markets are up telling me to slow down and making too much money for my clients. Never one.
Never?
Well, right, of course.
Never.
But, what happened? The statement. Man, it's huge.
What you want to do is to look at the downside. At the end of the day, the portfolio that is the right one for you is the one you're going to keep through good and bad. That is the right portfolio.
And at this stage in your life, your greatest concern about not getting rich, but it's about not becoming poor, correct? It's about maintaining this.
Right.
You can't afford to blow this.
Yeah. Do not. You
don't want to create another civil engineering firm. That was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yes,
I know.
A lot of long hours.
We understand. We're in professional services, not too dissimilar. Mm-hmm. So we understand what it takes to create a firm. You worked hard for these dollars.
So with that, I would actually err on the more conservative side. And you should do some introspection about how you reacted to the markets in the last time around through the Great Recession.
But I don't think his portfolio should be that much different than, say, CalPERS, the public employee retirement system in the
largest
state.
One in the country. I don't think it
or
should
other
be.
Endowments.
And you should treat it like a pension fund.
And highly diversified.
Appreciate the call, Steve.
We're going to take a quick break here. And if you want to join our program, love to take your call. 888-2-HANSON to join the program. We'll be right back.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean. You can always, always find us at HansonMcLean.com as well.
Yes.
In addition to this show and our podcast.
Yes, and a number of great things that we've got going on. Plus, we have a live webinar coming up in Denver on July 12th. And if you're in Denver, you'll hear more about that. But it's called The Five, and it's fantastic. Online live event, video yeah. event where Pat and I...
We did one in Sacramento and in the San Francisco Bay Area on the 28th, and it was extremely well received. So thank you for listening and visiting us on our live.
Yeah, but we'll get more information July 12th for the Denver region for Hanson McLean's The Five.
The Five. It's a new concept we came out with. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, and I think it's got legs.
Yeah, we argued.
We did argue a bit.
We fought. We made up.
All right, let's continue back with the calls. 888-2-HANSON is the number to join us. We're with Kirk. Kirk, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Fantastic, Kirk. What can we do for you?
The question I have two daughters in college, and we're both taking out loans to help out with the college payments, my daughter and myself. And I was wondering if I could consider, can I do a $10,000 gift and write that off to my daughter as part of her college expense, or is the whole college expense deductible?
Well,
no,
you can give her 10 grand. Yeah, but no. The challenge is, you can only receive a tax deduction if money goes to a bona fide nonprofit, a 501c3 corporation. Now,
and while your daughter may appear to be a nonprofit
or charity case,
you don't get a tax deduction for it.
No.
Well, are you allowed to give $10,000 gifts?
But you don't even need to worry about that, because any amount of money that you actually pay towards her college education, if you write it to the college or the dorm or wherever, it doesn't matter what the amount is. You don't have to worry about the limits yeah. on that. So
you can give her more money in addition.
All college.
Yeah, there's no
all like, college expenses are deductible.
Let's say she was going.
They're not deductible. They are not deductible.
Oh, correct.
I mean,
but they're not
itemizable.
No,
none of that.
Mm. What Pat stated is, it's you don't have to pay a gift tax for the privilege of paying for your daughter's education.
I may have answered a question you didn't even
yes.
ask.
That doesn't even pertain to most of the population, for that matter.
Correct. So you can't deduct it in any way, shape, or form, either the amount that you actually pay yeah. towards the college.
Yeah.
You can't deduct it.
Yeah.
Nor can you deduct the interest on a loan, for that matter, unless the home loan
has a home equity line of credit.
A home equity line of credit.
Of under $100,000.
Correct. Do you think people really follow that $100,000 rule?
No, they don't. Sorry, Kirk. Wish we could help you out more
yeah.
there. Well, at least they'll both graduate in four. Get them to graduate in four and make a lot of money so when you're old, they can take care of you in your old age. And you can say, remember back in the day when I was paying for your college.
Yeah, see how that works
yeah,
out
yeah.
for
part
you.
Part of my retirement plan, right?
Yeah, yeah. Good luck on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Call us back in 10 years. Let
yeah,
us know.
Good luck there, buddy.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
Thanks, Kirk. We both have two kids in college.
Yeah, and actually both of mine are planning on graduating in less than four.
Less than?
One at four and one less than four.
My son, I don't think anyone's over. It's like you kind of have to graduate in four, and I don't know if you can graduate early. They highly discourage graduating early. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, one of the things we'll see some changes in the future is on education. It has to.
So
it has. I was reading. I saw an article that they put. It was the number of retirees, people in their 60s with student loans. And it was like 46% of those aged 65 or older with student loans were in default on them.
Well, that makes sense.
Okay, not a big shock, right?
Right? If you haven't paid it off by 60, there's probably a good chance that you're
not
going to
pay it
off.
But come on, the cost of education keeps going up and up. And at some point in time, you got to question some of these colleges that have these huge tuitions. I know there are some professors that work extremely hard, great, diligent, like really there for the students. There are also some that teach a couple lectures a week and are almost never available to the students and have aides do the rest and make very good livings at it.
So
and some of these things, there's going to be a breaking point.
Brad, our vice president of marketing, was telling me the other day about how in the future, it's conceivable that you actually could go to class with a virtual reality headset on and feel like you're in a regular classroom.
That's what he's predicting.
Yeah, which I thought was just fascinating. You think about it.
you're in your bedroom. You've got a virtual reality glasses on, a headset, whatever they look like, and it feels like you're in a regular classroom. You're interacting.
That was his idea what the future may look like.
I think it was brilliant.
Maybe they'll just plant the information in your head. You don't have to go.
I would do very, very well at that school.
Got to take a quick break here in just a moment, but I want to remind all of you about our learning library at HansonMcLane.com, where we've got great online tools, resources, and, of course, this podcast, we have more podcast downloads than we have viewers on any typical.
Or you mean listeners?
Listeners, what'd I say?
Viewers. It's a radio show. That'd be something.
You know, we recorded this video for, and we looked at the percentage of people that actually like to watch it, very small.
Yes. Yeah.
So we just said, forget the cameras. That way we can dress however you want. Like, I don't know where you got that ridiculous looking t-shirt, man. I really don't. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLane's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLane.
Yep. Glad you're still with us on this weekend precursor to the 4th of July. Celebrations are starting now for a lot of people. People on the roads.
Just be safe.
For 4th of July?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I have a friend who's an emergency room doctor.
I can only imagine what it's like on 4th of July.
He says it's pretty nasty. Pretty nasty.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I think it's always a good idea to take explosive devices that have some sort of a combustible material
and
mix it with alcohol and then have them do it at night.
Night. After someone's been drinking all day.
Yes.
That's a great idea. Now I think about it. And I've never been one to spend money on.
Better is if you mixed in large bodies of water.
Yes.
It'd be perfect. It'd be the trifecta.
Yes. Let's have people drink copious amounts of alcohol all day long out on open waters with no life vest and explosives.
Perfect. Yeah. I've never been one to want to spend money on things that explode like that.
I don't understand. And it's a lot of counties, it's banned now. And
my respect for the dollar is too much.
I just don't quite understand. Although when I was a kid, I remember we used to make our own little like M80 things. My friend somehow got gunpowder.
What are you, Tiny Tim?
My friend got gunpowder, and I shouldn't talk about it.
Yes, I'm thinking the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms would be giving you a call here any moment.
That was 30 some years ago.
Where's your friend now?
Oh, he's in jail. No, I don't know what he is. He's fine. He's an upstanding citizen. Are you kidding me?
All right.
I don't know what he's doing. Actually,
okay,
I don't know what he's doing.
So we have on our website, you can send questions to questions@moneymatters.com. So the name of our radio show is Money Matters. And you can send us any question you want financial if you do not wish to come on the air.
And sometimes we'll do a blog out of these, do a reader question. We also, Retirement Minute that is broadcast on KCRA, sometimes our readers.
Which you can see on our website. Questions. Or you could go to, or we'll answer it on the air. So you go to questions@moneymatters.com. So here's the question. The reader's question is, I'm 62 and about to retire. Should I keep my term insurance or should I invest in a permanent life insurance policy? So I'm 62.
Go fish.
About to retire. Do I keep my term insurance or do I invest in a permanent policy? The question is, why do you need insurance at all? That's my question.
Most people at retirement age do not need life insurance.
What is the purpose of life insurance?
It's to replace an income that's tied to one's life, which could either come through their labor, through work, right? So you're young and working, and should something happen to you, that your paycheck's going to cease. So
you have obligations that would live past
your life.
If you die. That is what life insurance is for.
Or it's an income that's tied to your life, such as a pension, typically a pension that would cease.
So,
or it could be some trust you inherited some money that's tied to your life that would not continue on to your family. Highly unlikely, but
pretty rare now. Pretty rare.
Yes.
Pretty rare.
But if there's some need, if you're getting older and there's some need for life insurance, for estate planning, of course, now
pretty rare.
Pass on about
You know, if you're married,
$11 million each. There's over $20 million as a couple. But you know, if you've got a family farm worth $50 million,
then you might. But you wouldn't be.
But don't. If you've got a family farm of $50 million,
don't be writing the question into a radio show about whether you need estate planning or not. If right, in fact, if you've got a net worth of over $5 million,
there's a second opinion.
Okay, so. This question, I'm 62 and about to retire. Should I keep my term life insurance or should I invest in a permanent life insurance? Probably neither. Correct. Probably neither.
And I see people pay for life insurance because they're like, well, I've been paying for it. I mean, insurance. I mean, if I think back at how many years I paid for my homeowner's insurance, but my house has not yet to burn to the ground.
You don't get mad about that.
No, I'm glad my house didn't burn to the ground, or my auto insurance.
Yes.
And I don't like to be reminded of how much I paid in insurance over the years, but that's what insurance is for. It's for...
Yeah, it's pooled risk.
And the older you get, the more expensive your life insurance is going to be, regardless if it's term insurance or permanent insurance. It's all factored in.
All right, so the second part of this question that we're going to answer that he did not ask is, there's almost never a need for permanent life insurance. Permanent life insurance is something that carries cash value inside of it. They're sold as life insurance plans that are / retirement plans. They're sold as variable universal life, whole life, universal life. They're sold as a plan that will fund the retirement and not have taxation on it. There is almost never a need for a life insurance policy that carries cash value in it.
98% of the time.
Correct.
Maybe 99% of the time.
And if there is a need, you better understand how it works and you better use it correctly. Right.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So that's the answer to that question.
If you'd like to be part of our program with a question for us, we'll take your call. To join the show, 1-888-2-HANSON. Get you on to Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's talk with Gary. Gary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Scott. I enjoyed the book. I haven't read it all, but it's really informative. I appreciated the book.
Well, thank you. How can we help you, Gary? Pat's with me too, by the way.
So. I'm that's okay, Gary. I'm not used to compliments. The five kids I grew up with, they weren't passed around very often.
I hear you. That's right. It's mine. No, my question relates to some property we bought back in like 69. I was still in college.
How did you buy property when you were in college?
Well, we worked on a farm, so we had a lot of resources in terms of land and timber and that sort of thing, and it wasn't that expensive back then like it is now.
Got it.
So I worked it in the summer and paid it off like in 3 years.
Oh, good for you.
Wow.
Good for you. What are you thinking of doing with this property?
Selling it. That was our retirement.
And what did you pay for this property?
Like $30,000.
And is it land or a house?
It's just land. Okay. It's raw land. It's just beautiful North Carolina, Western North Carolina property. Just beautiful.
And what do you think you could get for it?
Probably around $400,000 or so.
Okay.
And is it on the market now? Are you in a contract or?
It is. It's actually, we've got a contract on it for that. So,
okay.
We were pretty excited. You know, we'd never considered selling it. It was something I was hoping maybe even pass on to my grandkids, but we just decided to get rid of the tax burden and all that.
Now, have you calculated what you have to pay in capital gain taxes on this?
Yeah, that's going to be pretty steep. It looks like it's going to be about $80,000.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's just, you know, Uncle Sam gets his. I know that.
So you're gonna net $320. So your question for us is?
Yeah, what? I don't know if that's enough. I saw in Social Security, if you make it to 66, which I am, you're more likely to live to be like 85. So I've got about 20 years here, maybe.
And so you want to turn this into some retirement income is what it sounds like.
Income, I do. I want to pay off our house in 5 years.
What do you own your house now?
Only about 95.
And what's the interest rate on the house?
4.75.
What if we said we, for a portion of these dollars, we had a guaranteed investment, Now, very often we say guarantees in this, but we're going to say guaranteed 4.75%.
No risk whatsoever. You give us, let's say, $95,000, and I guarantee you I can get you 4.75% without any market risk at all. Any market risk. What would you think?
That would be outstanding.
All right.
Okay. Then pay off the mortgage.
Pay off the mortgage. Pay off the mortgage. There you go.
But really? Just pay it off? Absolutely. Right up front.
Just write a check.
Mm. Okay.
How much are your payments on that house?
Just a little over $600.
Yeah, so right there, that's going to save you $600 a month.
Yeah, actually more than that because you income that you make, you pay taxes on, and then you take the remainder and you make your mortgage payment. So
right.
So that's the first thing we would do, because 4.75 is a relatively high interest rate on a mortgage in this environment.
It could, now some might argue, go out and refinance, but at this stage in life, we don't think having a mortgage is prudent at all.
Yeah, I've tried that. It only knocks the mortgage payment down maybe $30 or so. It's not much.
Oh, when you...
It's not a large amount.
Yeah, yeah. So you just want to pay the whole thing off.
I'd pay it off, and that would leave you with about $225,000. How much income are you hoping to generate off these investments?
You know, that's hard to say. We probably don't make enough on Social Security to get, you know, through each month. So I work in addition part-time. So, but it's a good part-time paying job. So I don't know how much longer I can keep doing that.
How much
I would think $1,000 a month, something like that.
And how much, so you're working part-time now and not receiving Social mm-hmm. Security. Is that correct?
No, I am getting Social Security.
Oh, you are?
Security.
Okay.
I waited until 66 to retire.
Okay, and how much money are you making at your part-time job?
Probably about $1,500 a month or so.
And said $1,000 a month. If your mortgage was paid off, would you still need that much?
Probably not.
Yeah, so let's say your mortgage is paid off. That's $600 a month. And let's say $225,000, you had it in a diversified portfolio. Let's say you were withdrawing at 4% of that. That'd be about $9,000 a year.
Call it $750 a month is what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would really knock a big hole in the monthly allowances I would need.
Yeah, you're probably going to be net ahead. So what you want to do I'd go one step further. I'd say, look, if you're working part-time and you can afford to not take any distribution from this.
Yeah, have the mortgage paid off.
And have the mortgage paid off. Live on the Social Security and the part-time income. And let these dollars grow until you don't work anymore.
Yep.
And then start the distribution on that. So because you mentioned the seven personal decisions.
I'm going to throw one other thing out there completely off there. Another option is when you sell this, do a tax-free exchange into a rental home. And
oh, I love that.
Use the income from that.
Because we're real good on fixer-uppers. That's what we bought. We bought it at $100, and it's worth probably $170 now.
I mean, I don't know if...
Wow. Can you do that?
Oh, you said, gosh, you could do it. You could do it into two properties if you wanted to.
Yep.
You could
sell for $400,000, get two properties at $200,000. Maybe if they were a little more spendy than that, you had a small mortgage on each one.
You know, Scott,
if you have experience with rentals,
I'm going to make an admission here. I got off the phone with my handyman an hour ago, because I'm not very good at that sort of thing. But if you're good at that sort of thing, I don't think it's anything you should discount. Do you have any money anywhere else? Do you have money in IRAs or 401ks or anything like that?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
How much?
Probably about 25.
Okay. So,
if you were my father or older brother, you've had experience with rentals, I would probably recommend doing a 1031 tax-free exchange.
At least for some, if not all of the money.
At least for some, if not all the money into a rental property. Maybe not all. Maybe $300,000 of it.
Yeah, you take some money out.
Or $270,000 or something.
Take some
like
money
that.
Out, pay off the mortgage, and look at a rental for the rest. So I kind of like that idea, Scott.
Yeah, and that gives you you're comfortable with rentals. and you like that idea, I would look at that. You want to do that before your house goes, before it's sold. You need to have that an intermediary lined up ahead of time. But anyway, that's a lot of options to consider there, Gary. Appreciate your call. We're continuing. 1-888-2 Hanson. Let's talk with Linda. Linda, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Linda.
I have a rental that I've had for many, many years. I paid $18,750 for it, so I have quite a bit of capital gains. But I understand there's such a thing as a Section 1031 exchange.
Yes.
And I'm kind of thinking about that if it would be available to me. So I want to know a little bit more details. Is there a period of time that I have to reinvest? Do I have to reinvest in the same type of home?
Got it.
This one is a single-family home, and I'd like to do a duplex.
Got it. And the reason you want to make a change is why?
Why?
I don't like the neighborhood the old one's in now.
Okay.
And it's becoming more run down.
And what's the value of this home?
I would say about under $300,000, I'd say $250,000.
Okay. So we'll walk through what a 1031 exchange is.
And they could work wonders.
Yeah, just kind of a ballpark. And it's an unusual thing that they allow this for, they allow 1031s and something similar with life insurance and annuity contracts called 1035 exchanges. They don't allow it with stocks or bonds or mutual funds. Which are these tax-free exchanges from one asset into the other. And when Trump got elected, the big question was, are they going to overhaul the tax system? And you think, yeah, they probably will. And then I thought to myself, well, they'd be touching the 1031
exchange. But he's been a real estate guy.
Right. Correct. So what this does is allow big, people like you, Linda.
Everyday people, and in addition, large companies.
To exchange something that is appreciated, let's call it a piece of real estate, 1031. Let's say you bought this home for $18,000 and some change. It's now worth $250,000. You can exchange this into a completely different home without actually identifying any or paying any capital gains
on
this.
Total sense.
Makes complete sense.
And you can
sense.
Do it into a duplex.
Yeah, correct. Or many other types of properties as well.
Yeah.
So
the key is you need to use an intermediary. I've personally done a 1031 exchange, maybe more than one. But you need to have an intermediary lined up ahead of time, which is essentially, if you talk to your real estate agent or title firm, they'll recommend one. It's not a big deal. You pay a small fee, essentially.
Oh, it is kind of a big deal because
it has to be done right.
And you have to be one that you trust, because there was a huge Ponzi scheme that went on a fair number enough of years ago with an intermediary that was actually
and so you,
pocketing
you
the money.
You cannot take possession of the proceeds. It must go to the intermediary, and you must have a property identified. Was it 180 days, Pat?
I think it is.
There's a period
like
of time.
6 months or so.
Your best bet would be on start. And you can actually, if you had the cash, you could actually buy a property ahead of time and use the exchange as well. There's a couple ways to do it. But this is... makes total sense for you, Linda.
Absolutely.
Complete sense.
Absolutely.
I'd strongly recommend it.
So the intermediary wouldn't be a real estate agent.
No.
Are they attorneys? Or,
so they're firms. So let me think. I did one. The last one was it in 2015. I'm trying to remember where I was referred to this firm. Someone referred, and I never met anybody there. It was all done online. They sent me a bunch of paperwork. I read it and signed where I needed to sign. It was not a big deal.
So, Linda, this is how I would find it. I would actually go to Google, and I would just type in 1031 Intermediary Sacramento.
Okay.
That's
or talk to a real estate agent if they've got one that they work with. It's very common.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the bigger, the better. The bigger, bigger. The bigger the better. The bigger their intermediary, and I hate to say this,
the bigger the firm.
The bigger the firm.
Not the bigger the duplex she buys.
Correct. The bigger the firm, the better.
And as long as you invest all of the proceeds, it's not necessarily all the proceeds, because if there's forgiveness of debt, it's another issue. You don't have any loan on here, correct?
No.
Okay, perfect. So no, as long
not,
as you,
not after 50 years.
Well, so, yeah, hey, come on. Are you kidding? You unbelievable. It's people see that they've owned a home 50 years and they've got a huge mortgage on it because they use it like an ATM machine.
Yeah. Eight times what they paid for the house. Not unusual at all.
You don't have spinning wheels on your Cadillac Escalade, I'm guessing, Linda? No. So you've kept it. So as long as you invest the proceeds, that or more, into the new property, there's no capital gains. If it's something less than whatever you receive, that's considered boot and becomes taxable. But great. Makes total sense for you. Total sense.
Everything would be reinvested. So, okay.
Perfect. Love it. Perfect. Great idea. Great idea.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Linda. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Okay. I will.
Bye-bye.
You guys take care.
All right. We're going to go to the phones. We're going to talk to Tara. Tara, thanks for joining Handsome McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Tara.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Quick question. So recently, my employer dropped our 401k program due to the fact that only a few of us were actually participating.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering what I should do to continue investing in my retirement future.
I've written a number of times about the problem with the fact that our retirement savings is coupled with our employer. Right. So if your 401k, you're allowed to contribute. What's the limit this year, Pat? Do you remember the limits?
It's 20.
Six. We should know.
I'm over. Is it?
You're thinking about yourself.
It's 17,500.
17. Yeah. So you should be allowed to save that whether your employer offers a 401k or not. But you can't. It's what's ridiculous. So you don't have a 401k anymore. How much were you putting in your 401k?
I was maxing it out. So I was putting 20%, I believe.
Which, what did that mean?
And how much was that dollar amount?
Oh, goodness. I'd have to look at my statement.
And how?
I was roughly, go ahead.
How old are you?
I am 42.
Okay.
So give us the ballpark, roughly.
So approximate dollar amount.
I think I was putting, I'm sorry, I'm totally drawing a blank right now.
8,000? You're putting.
At least 8,000.
So how much did you?
A little more.
Approximately, how much money do you make?
I make 75 a year.
Okay, so you're putting about, let's call
15
it,
grand, which is
say that again.
About 15,000.
Yeah, which is below the limit for your age. For your age, there's a maximum up to age 50, and then there's another number after
married?
Age 50.
I am.
Okay, and does your spouse contribute to a company savings plan?
He just changed jobs, and so he will as soon as he becomes eligible after, I think it's like 6 months.
Was he contributing before?
Yes, he was.
Okay. So here's the challenge. The maximum you're going to be able to contribute is $5,500 a year to an IRA.
Okay.
How many employees were at this employer?
You know, we have seasonal employees, mm-hmm. and so full-time, there's less than 10 of us. And when the employers themselves, they got to an age where they were.
Here's what I would do. If I were in your situation or you're my younger sister, I would recommend this. So you were saving $15,000 a year before. I'd say contribute $5,500 a year into a IRA.
And do the same for your husband.
Well, you won't get a tax deduction for him. I would contribute to a Roth IRA for your husband, assuming your income is below $180,000, somewhere right in there. And then that's $5,000, your $5,500 into your IRA, $5,500 into his Roth IRA. There's $11,000. The other $4,000, I would just buy a total stock market index fund. I'd get a low cost. Mutual fund. I wouldn't do an ETF because you want to make ongoing contributions. It's easier to
make it tax efficient. Have the dollars come right out of your checking account on a monthly basis, just like they went into your 401k on a monthly basis, and you could set it up.
Set it up like that.
Yeah. Yep. So it gets sucked out of your paycheck probably like
automatically.
You have
other bills. And the only way it really works is if you actually do it that way, because most people have competing interests for their money. Right? Do you have children?
Yes.
That is a competing interest for your money.
She hesitated.
Very much so.
Right? So you get it. So if it comes out of the checking account, when you say to the kids, hey, no one needs a pair of Nikes that cost $131.
Yeah.
You can actually mean it.
That's what was so nice about the 401k program is that I never saw it. It just came out, and then all of a sudden,
Yeah.
It stopped and went, oh, no.
Yeah. And actually, so, and you live in the state of California?
I do.
There's proposed legislation right now to create a state savings
program. But it won't. I guarantee it's not going to be 17.5.
It won't be
the same limits.
It won't be that. It won't be that.
Okay.
So it actually, the numbers, it would be up to 5 to 10% of your income. But for right now, I love Scott's advice. Roth IRA for your husband, IRA for you, and put the difference into a
total stock
market index.
Yep.
Low cost, set it up on a monthly basis.
Set it all up on a monthly basis.
Okay.
If you don't, it's going to, every month it's going to get pushed back and pushed back. And then you're like, oh no, it's been a year from now. And
Yeah.
This isn't that bad.
I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, no.
This isn't great, but it's not that bad.
Okay.
All right. You're obviously very responsible for contributing as much as you have at 42
and
having 42 kids at home.
With kids at home? Yeah. Very good. Excellent.
Well, thanks. You'd be proud of yourself. My parents taught me well.
All right. Well, it takes discipline, too. All
right, so thanks for
appreciate
calling.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, it's not always what's done. But if you want more of this program, our podcast, you can get our podcast. And by the way, at a podcast, you can go and listen to previous episodes because we've got
that's how podcasts work.
That's why.
It is an electronic file that is stored.
And if you're thinking, man, I've never actually listened to a podcast, we even have a video, online video, that tells you step by step how to set it up. So if your neighbors are talking about it, you're like, I'm kind of haven't figured this out yet. We're going to help you out there. Anyway, we're out of time. Enjoy your 4th of July celebrations this next week, and we'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLean Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLean.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLean.com today.